You're listening to Album Swap, a podcast about sharing music with your friends. Welcome to episode 3 of Album Swap, the podcast where each episode, Fred and I sit down and pick an album for each other to listen to. First of all, I want to thank everybody. Third episode, we're excited. We want to keep this going.
Thank you.
For listening. Little housekeeping, I wanted to let everybody know that we were able to get the podcast on Stitcher. If you listen to that, you can subscribe through Stitcher. We have some social accounts out there if you're interested in checking them out. We're on Twitter at Album Swap, Facebook page Album Swap, Instagram Album Swap again. And then finally, we have, for all you really hardcore geeks out there, a Tumblr account at Album Swap.
At Album Swap. At Album Swap. That's the key. At Album Swap.
Very creative. But anyway, so if you want to check that out, go for it. Good stuff happening there, and we'll try to share other tidbits and kind of behind-the-scenes looks at the recording of the podcast.
Yeah. So, follow us on Facebook, like us on Twitter.
Shameless plug.
Shameless.
So anyway, that's the housekeeping. Last week, we wanted to follow up on some of the things, and Fred, you've got some updates.
Yeah, there were a couple things, a couple loose ends, I guess, from last week. I know the first one, so we talked about Cry of Love. And my friend, my Australian buddy, Gabriel Lee, who had heard him, we were unclear, or unsure, I guess, how he had gotten a hold of Cry of Love all the way in Perth, Australia. And he said it was a bandmate of his, the guy played bass, and just gave him a CD when they were, I guess he was probably in high school age, and so how it got to him, that we don't know, so maybe we'll have to follow that. That could be a more difficult search, but it was given to him by a friend and a fellow bandmate. the other one was, and this is still a current mystery. So this is not just an answer, but a plea to everybody listening. If you know the answer, let us know. We were unsure who did Sturgill Simpson's album art on A Sailor's Guide to Earth, and we had some guesses. Maybe it was the same artist who did some of the Drive By Truckers art, but. We cannot find it. We have a buddy who was in the biz, played with Shooter Jennings for about a year. Asked him. He had no idea. We all work in search engine marketing. Couldn't find it anywhere.
You would think we could find it.
You would think. We have the vinyl. Checked it all through the vinyl. No mention of who did it.
Not in the liner notes.
So no idea currently who did the album art on Sturgill Simpson's A Sailor's Guide to Earth. So if you know, please let us know.
Let us know. You can put it in the comments or shoot us a note on Twitter or whatnot.
Anything. Whatnot, anything.
I will not get sleep, really, until I find out the answer to this mystery.
Sure.
You know, who did the album artwork. All right, so this week I picked for Fred to listen to an album by Neil Young and Crazy Horse called Ragged Glory. I was telling Fred earlier that I picked this because you know, again, to keep with the concept of the whole podcast, that it's a rocking album, but also it was like the first Neil Young album I had actually purchased. You know, I'd heard his stuff on the radio, and you knew who he was, and you knew Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Buffalo Springfield and all that, but this was like the first album that like I actually bought of Neil Young's and really appreciated.
That's awesome. Was it the actual vinyl or is it like a tape?
It was a CD.
Because it came out in 1990.
Yeah, it came out in 1990. You know, at that point, I'd actually gotten rid of my vinyl.
Oh.
And pretty much gone all digital. So. No, I had cassettes. You know, at that time, I probably was still recording or was transitioning out of the phase of recording onto cassette to play in your car because I was such an audio geek to a certain point that I would buy those early CD players in the car.
Oh, wow.
You know, and sure. Some of them actually, I don't know if you ever saw them, like had a cassette interface that actually transmitted.
I think I may have seen pictures.
Yeah, they were awful.
Not firsthand.
The first one was more like a Walkman where you actually, you had the cassette interface and then you could use it like if you actually were to walk around, but it didn't work because it would skip.
Sure.
But nonetheless, yeah, it was...
A little history lesson.
Yeah, a little old-time audiophile. But pretty much, yeah, it was on CD. Still have it, love it, Great album.
And it's Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Yes.
He had been playing with him for a little bit at this point, too, right? This wasn't the first time he had done an album. I think it was the sixth one that he had done with him.
Yeah, he'd done a lot with him, and he'd done a couple other solo and different projects before that. And so when this came out, you know, it was one of those that it was like, oh, yeah, I'll buy this and check it out.
And then it rocked.
And it rocked, yeah.
And it rolled. Cool. Well, so the album I swapped is from a band called Vulfpeck with a V. V-U-L-F-P-E-C-K. They're a young group. I think they started in about 2011. They met at University of Michigan Music School. They kind of have that band geeky feel. Name of the album is called Thrill of the Arts. It was their first LP, so first full-length album. They had put out, they had released four EPs before that. They had actually done a lot before that. The first thing they ever did was putting out an album on YouTube in 2011. And then they just followed up with a couple EPs. They even backed up a guy on a national tour. First time they ever played live was like October of 2013. So they definitely danced around for a bit before they got to it. And yeah, their sound, to me, you don't hear a lot anymore. They kind of wanted to model it after that backup rhythmic section, kind of like the Funk Brothers, Muscle Shoals kind of thing. Not really focusing on vocals, just kind of grooving. And it's kind of evolved into what it is now. It's kind of even hard to put a name on it. I mean, they're a band, but there's so much more than that. They're really DIY. They do pretty much all their own production, all of their booking, all their management. They have their own typeface, Wolf Mono, that they created. They have a production plugin on site on their website that you can get called the Wolf Compressor. They do a lot of kind of unique and quirky things that make them more of an entity than just a band. You know, their sound carries more than just what it is. So. Vulfpeck has just been a band I really caught my interest from the beginning, and this was their first, first LP, so I wanted to pass that over to you. I felt pretty confident you had never heard of them. Four nerds kind of from who met in Michigan. They're from different parts, but yeah, really excited, heavy on the bass, excited to see what your thoughts were on.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to admit, I love, nerdy art rock out of the Midwest.
These guys are so talented, yeah.
All right, so those are the two albums we picked this week to swap, and we'll come back. And which one you want to do first?
I think we'll let you get the rock first this time. We'll let you shoot first.
So we'll do Vulfpeck?
I think we'll do Vulfpeck.
We'll do Vulfpeck. So all right, so we'll be right back with a review of Vulfpeck, Thrill of the Art.
You're listening to The Album Swap.
And we're back with the first album of this episode. And that album is Vulfpeck, Thrill of the Arts. I think I said art last time. I was trying to remember whether it was plural or not.
It is plural.
Thrill of the Arts. Vulfpeck, very interesting name. When you first sent it to me, I was thinking, you know, I went to NC State, so I was thinking Vulfpeck. And when a few people were asking me what I was listening to this week, I told them, I was like, Vulfpeck, like Wolfpack, but like change the...
A little more German.
Change the beginning of the first part, and then, you know, instead of pack, it's peck. Interesting album. I love the album cover art, by the way. Very simple, but really cool. Kind of reminds me a bit of like Kraftwerk. And those guys of the 70s that were doing a lot of experimental stuff. And I wouldn't say they're as much experimental. I think they have some experimental to them, and I like that, as much as, like, funky jazz.
Their sound definitely has an experimental feel to it, right? Not experimental to the point where we're going, getting real trippy, but definitely has an experimental feel to it. It's not your typical sound.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. I think they're going in there, pushing the limits, and having fun. I think that's the other thing that I liked about this album was that it's got a real upbeat sound. They seem to be, you know, having a good time in the studio.
There's a lot of fun there. And they're like that live. Like, if you ever get a chance to see them live, they are jumping around. They switch instruments a lot. So they're jumping. The lead guy, Jack Stratton, kind of like the... I mean, I say lead guy. They all kind of do their own thing, but he'll get up there and say jokes. They'll get crowd involved. You know, they have a lot of fun. Fun's definitely a huge part of what they do.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it shows through in the music. You know, you said earlier they're from the Midwest. So when you said, like, you know, four bored art music or music geeks from the Midwest, it kind of reminds me a bit of, like, say bands like Devo and stuff like that. That, you know, I think Devo almost did it, took a step further and say fashion and all that part. But, you know, a little bit of art rock in the sense of we're not going to fit in this conventional container that the music industry likes to put people in, and as well as fans like you and I. But I did feel like the boundaries were just thrown out, and they went in there and did what they wanted to do. And, you know, you're either going to like it or not. I immediately liked it. I liked the bouncy sound. I liked the different, like, bringing in synths as well as the classical instruments. I thought it was real strong.
Yeah, they definitely do a good job mixing a lot of different sounds, and you kind of get that feeling of kind of like the band, like this. You have this one band that you feel like they hang out all the time. They, you know, they probably live in like a house, a Midwestern house, and they just wake up and all they do is do music. That's just kind of that's the picture I get of these guys. And, you know, when we're saying music nerd and stuff, that's definitely a term of endearment, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I would love to wake up and do nothing but play music with my friends and get super nerdy about it.
I wish I was this talented.
Yeah, geez, Louise. Yeah. Yeah,
if I was this talented, I wouldn't be, you know, sitting here.
It takes a commitment like that to get what these guys do, and it is. It's some impressive stuff. They do it their own way. It's a ton of fun, and it's just downright funky.
It is funky. All right, so let's cut into that funk.
Cut into the funk.
The very first track, Welcome to Wolf Records. I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit of the intro and let you hear a bit of it. I mean, right there, Fred, you can hear it. I mean,
I'm boogieing over here. I'm going back and forth over here.
You know, I like, again, it's got kind of like that classic intro bit. It almost sounds like a movie soundtrack.
Yeah, very much so.
And then the bass comes in, and
they're just so sharp, too, right? They're so on it. They're just so on it.
Yeah, I agree. So I thought this was like a strong opener.
Fun.
Straight fun. So that's the opening track, Welcome to Wolf Records. Second track I liked a lot, Back Pocket.
This is one of my favorite ones on the album. The video, if you got a chance to watch the video, this is just great.
All right, so yeah, I definitely want to check it out, the video. So again, yeah, I agree. I really like this. It's got that sexy sound to it.
You want to dance with a girl to this thing.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of like almost like Prince in his early days.
Especially with the voice, right?
Yeah. It's got a little bit of that vocal sound that reminded me of Prince. So, you know, second song, I was just like, wow, just kicks butt.
Yeah, Back Pocket's one of my favorite ones they do.
So So that's bad pocket. And then...
Yeah, put it in the back pocket. Not the front pocket. Not put it in the back pocket.
In the back pocket, exactly. Third track, Funky Dunk. Funky
That
Duck.
Is great. That is great. Funky Duck.
Not duck. Or not dunk, but duck. This was one of my favorite tracks, too. I thought this track, the heavy organs, the kind of wailing intro. In fact, to me, this is so funky that you have to cut it with the knife. So let's listen a little bit of
the duck that's funky.
Of the, yes. Hey, ooh, he's on the scene. So yeah, like I told you, I this was one of my favorites on here.
He gave the first TED Talk. Did you know
the,
that?
The first TED Talk I loved too. I thought that was again, if you'd played this for a lot of people, you could be like, this is some lost, you know, 70s funk track, and they'd believe you.
Sure.
It's got that sound. And I mean, it's kind of got that soul to it. And I think that's what makes it feel very, you know, genuine. Versus somebody that's just trying to go out there and do like a cover band or an imitation band to a certain extent.
Sure.
So, Funky Dunk. So three tracks into this, I'm loving it. I'm just like, I feel like almost this is like this album I had listened to in 1975 and had lost and all of a sudden found again.
Sure.
You know, because
yeah.
it had such a reminiscent sound. Next track, Ranga 2, you know, I'm probably not going to play too much of that, or I'm not going to play that just because I like the slow bass intro, and I like kind of the synth vocal. Actually, I'll play that where it kind of comes in towards the middle. But again, this I thought it had a good mix of like some contemporary electronic sounds right there mixed in with the more kind of traditional funky jazzy sound that they had.
Some experimentalness there too.
Yeah,
gets a little weird there.
Yeah, the next track, Game Winner, I liked. It's a bit of a slow emotional song, but what I really liked even better was the track number 6, Walkies, which had just a really kind of funky sound to it. And, you know, the other thing I liked about this album was...
I think those are barks, by the way. I think those are barks.
Yeah, I didn't know if they were barks or synthetic barks, but...
They're synthetic.
I dug that. It felt like a little bit like George Clinton, Atomic Dog, you know, reminiscent. And I love instrumentals, so I like that, like, about a third of this album is instrumentals.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's their thing, you know. They're definitely not big vocalists. I think they realize that you can do some stuff with equipment, you know, to make yourself sound good. But they definitely bring in vocalists a lot. Antoine Stanley is one that they bring in. He's a dude. 1612 is another one of their big songs. Not on this album, but he's the main dude on that. So I know he's on a couple of tracks on this album as well.
The next track they do is Christmas LA. I thought it was a nice holiday song. It had an early 80s feel.
I love this song, man. This is
kind of like Michael Jackson or even the Jacksons.
Sure, yeah. You almost want to hear it from the beginning. It just feels so much fun, right?
Yeah. mean, yeah, I agree.
I love that, it's little like, Jackson 5 kind of.
That's what I'm saying. It sounds almost like what the Jacksons would have put out, like mid 1970s.
It's a Christmas song that I feel like you can listen to in April or March.
Yeah, and well, I like that it's Christmas in LA too, because like that's not where you'd typically write a Christmas song.
Right, exactly.
So
Christmas in LA feels like, you know, it feels like summer in LA, right?
Exactly.
The temperature is always the same.
Yeah, it's beautiful year round. So. I thought again it was a nice twist. Interesting to have like a holiday song in the middle of it. So again, I thought
random,
was,
right? Random, yeah, but, random. But that's them. They're fun. They don't care. They do what they want to do. What they feel is good. And it that's Wolfpack. It's the Wolfpack sound. It's the Wolfpack thing.
So then track 8, they go into Conscious Club, an instrumental, and. Again, I thought this was just another fantastic track. So I thought the bongo drums, the bass line, it goes so well. And then
it's impossible not to dance. I'm boogieing.
Yeah, there. Yeah. I wrote down here. The song just kind of like makes me happy. It's bouncy. It's something that like if I'm listening to my headphones, I'm gonna be like grooving around a little bit. And then like the bass line just takes off on this, and I thought that was really cool.
Joe Dart is the man. That's the bassist is Joe Dart, and he is something else. And he grooves hard. He was I think Flea is one of his like big early influences, and you can see it. Watch a video of Joe Dart playing, and that's the way that you can see it in his body almost.
Yeah. He's working the bass. Is he slapping the bass?
Dude is slapping the bass, man. Yeah, no, he is an incredible talent on the bass, and a young one at that. So yeah.
Yeah, I thought this was just a great instrumental. From there, they go into Smile Meditation, which was a bit of a mellower song for this album. Kind of reminds me a little bit of a Stevie Wonder on the softer side.
Yeah, it does sound a lot like Stevie. It's almost like something you would hear in a hotel lobby. Sounds so good.
I mean, you can use it for bumper music.
Yeah,
it's
you really
that
can.
Good. I mean, it's just.
It's just so clean and crisp, and oh man, it makes you. It makes your ears feel good. I feel good listening to it. I want to dance. My feet are tapping. It's just. It does all the good things you want music to do.
And so the final track on this is. Guided smile meditation. So you know the track we just heard a second ago, smile meditation. They go into guided smile meditation.
This is a fun one. This is a fun track.
This you know kind of reminds me of like Nirvana. Nevermind, that track that's like 80 minutes at the end of the album, and it's weird stuff.
Sure.
It's very experimental. I like the spoken intro about the whole lossless format and Don Wasserman. I thought that was cool.
They walk you through it, right? They really kind of take you on it.
Yeah. And I mean, I like this track, but I think for some people it might be a bit out of place. But then again,
that's
Wolfpack,
right?
Yeah, I think that's what the cool factor is that, you know, not to be, you know, a music snob or anything. It's definitely something that if you're wanting to kind of expand your limits, it kind of talks to that. I mean, it's not a track you're going to throw on to like... jam out a party or anything like that, but it's definitely something that after you've listened to this whole album, it really kind of caps it off.
How funny would it be to throw that out at a party? I'm actually going to do that now. I'm going to throw this out.
I want to see you throw it out at a party. So, all right, so here's a little taste of guided smile meditation.
Meditation technique was pioneered by a man named Don Wasserman, and I had the honor to learn directly from Don. He would use acoustic sounds to guide the sensation of the meditation. I have expanded to the synthesizer, so I'll be at my keyboard to help guide these sensations. Let's start with the face. This is a very busy part of our body. This is mission control, a lot of senses meet at this nexus, and there's quite a bit of activity. There's a constant chatter in this region. Constant.
So, like I said, I think to the casual listener, this might throw them for a bit of a twist.
They might not even consider it a song.
Yeah, yeah. I think he kind of takes you through his kind of
it's fun
experimentation.
It's fun if you can, like, you know, you really have to put on the blinders and listen to
it's,
that.
It's a headphones track,
but you feel it. Like if you listen to what he's saying and you let him walk you through it, it is. There's a couple parts in there we won't spoil it, but there are a couple parts in there that's actually really funny what he does. And hey, you feel it. It's a pretty neat track. You don't ever really see that on albums, really ever.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit of a lost art. So that's Wolfpack, Thrill of the Arts. So I really like this album. I thought it was cool. I thought it was different. I like the experimental. I like the funk. I'll tell you my rating at the end of the show or at the end of the podcast. But overall, I really dug it. I really like this album a lot.
Yeah, excited to see the score.
Yes. All right. So that is Thrill of the Arts by Wolfpack. And we are going to come back and review Fred's impression of Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Ragged Glory.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Album Swap.
And we're back. We're going to go ahead and jump into the album that Brian gave to me, Neil Young and Crazy Horse. The album's called Ragged Glory. Came out in 1990. This was Neil Young's 19th album he ever did, 6 with Crazy Horse. It was the second he had come out with after about a decade where people kind of didn't forget about him. He kind of did some weird things where he fell out of the public eye, right? I think that's a way to put it. The album that came out before this, the year before, was called Freedom, and that had Rockin' in the Free World, which was that was the song, the track that brought him back where people again became more aware of.
Got him back on the radio.
Exactly.
And I agree, he did some weird stuff. Like I was telling you earlier, he did like a whole album of 50 stuff called Neil and the Shocking Pinks. Which, speaking of video, the video for that...
I love that name.
Yeah, the video for that's actually cool. He does Gone Wandering, which I can't remember who originally did it, but it's an old rockabilly song. And it's shot like in a single camera shot. And like it almost looks like it's speeded up in the background or something. But he did some kind of effect. And again, in the early days, it was pretty cool. But other than that, I agree. He kind of fell obscure. And Rockin' in the Free World brought him back, and then this was like the follow-up.
Yeah, and the sound that came with Rockin' in the Free World and that album, Freedom, that more, you know, more distorted, a little nastier, really laid the groundwork for 90s grunge rock, which is kind of what this album, we were saying earlier that what Rockin' in the Free World did as far as kind of introducing the sound, this kind of really took it to another level and really laid it out. You know, if Rockin' in the Free World through the alley, this Ragged Glory did the slam dunking part. You know, this is kind of where Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder, Sonic Youth, Dinosaur Jr., these bands, the Pixies, were pulling from was this little small about 2 year span of Neil Young and that distorted heavy guitar, again 90s grunge rock sound.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of laid the blueprint with it in a way, and I don't think he really meant to. It was just like him almost getting back to his basics and really like doing a garage band up at his farm. I like to talk about album cover. I like the fisheye lens shot of the barn, and it shows you the stripped down aspect that, you know, they're in there and they're jamming, and it kind of shows in how the music comes out. That garage band, that kind of band you're seeing in a club, and they're bringing their own amps. You know, it's not polished at all. It's just raw, and they're gonna rock out as best they can.
For that. And the album, like the fisheye look, it definitely has that '90s feel. If you didn't know that was Neil Young, and somebody said, "Oh, that's a '90s rock band," it would be. You didn't matter who the name was; you would just understand.
Yeah, and then kind of scratch type, which Pearl Jam and some of those bands definitely kind of borrowed interest from a little bit in the '90s.
For sure, and this was, I mean, making this kind of change in sound from what he was before with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Buffalo Springfield. They, not all of his fans, like his diehard fans, were big on this. You know, kind of maybe like when Dylan went electric. Maybe not to that degree, but they kind of had that pushback, right? Like Neil Young's touring with Sonic Youth and Social Distortion, and his fans weren't too excited about that. You know, this isn't the old Neil Young. It was kind of a shift into something new.
Well, you know, I think Neil he's always had a unique perspective, and he's a bit adventurous in what he does. So I think
he does what he wants.
Yeah, he does what he wants. And like I was telling you, like, this is the first Neil Young album I ever really bought and listened to. I'd heard all of his hits, and I kind of like Neil. I wasn't a huge fan because I hadn't really listened to some of the stuff until later. But for the most part, this was something that, you know, when you really learn to appreciate the artist. And so that was one of the things I liked about the album, was that it wasn't, say, a couple really awesome songs, and then maybe, you know, the other half are kind of so-so.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Big time Neil Young sound. Has a lot. This whole album has a lot of classic Neil Young elements, but with the 90s rock sound. I think that's something that I got. We're going to go ahead and start jumping into the tracks now, but that's something that I got throughout the entire album. The lyrics, kind of the way that the songs are arranged, that heavy rhythm section with the bass and the drums really pushing it, really driving it, and the guitars, just, again, kind of a heavy guitar. This obviously has a lot more distortion in it, which is that 90s sound, but the protesty songs, we're really frustrated with what we're dealing with on a daily basis. That whole Neil Young, classic Neil Young element is just sewn throughout the entire album.
Yeah, I'd agree, and like, for me, as a young 20-something at the time, I kind of agreed with it a little bit.
Yeah.
We'd just kind of gone through, like, the first Gulf War and stuff like that, and I think it's why grunge and some of that rock resonated with the audience at the time.
Yeah, which is, and so the name of the album, Ragged Glory, a nod to Old Glory, if you will.
Yep.
And so right when this album starts off, the name of the song is called Country Home. He's obviously talking about his home, our country. The first 10 seconds of this, I love, is such a good American introduction to the album. And then from there, we just kind of jump into different stuff. But the first 10 seconds, just listen to how American this is. Like that. That is just... It's so Neil Young, and it's so American when it starts off, and this whole song just has kind of that feeling of this is my home. It's got a nostalgic feel to it. It's got that country feel, right? This is where I want to go back to. This is where I feel comfortable. This is where I feel at home.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, country home, it just it does feel so comfortable, you know, to put it in one word. And, you know, again, I think in reading the liner notes and seeing that he recorded at his home, it does resonate really strongly.
Right, the Northern California Ranch. Yep. Yeah, and again, classic Neil Young elements with the songwriting, but that 90s sound, we'll just turn it up and just listen to that just a little bit. I'm thankful for my country home. Gives me peace of mind. Somewhere. Like, I just get this image of our flag, Ragged Glory, right? A little shredded and waving in the air. Yeah. Like, that's the feeling I get from this. 7-minute intro song, our start to the album. Again, nostalgic, country home.
Well, and you know, another thing we've been talking to Neil, and the other thing to remember is Crazy Horse.
Sure.
You know, the band that I think he, the other reason this album resonates so well is that he's so comfortable, and it is them kind of having a jam session.
There's a lot, yeah. That jam element
in the
very,
rustic barn,
very
you
present.
Know?
Sure.
And that's why, like, for 7 minutes, it doesn't drag on.
It does not.
It rocks. You know, they've got the strong drum beat. You know, some blues chords and stuff.
There are a couple other tracks. There's 2 10-minute tracks and an 8.5-minute track, and they have moments where it's your typical Neil Young, really heavy jam, where it does. Dragging's not the right word because that's a negative connotation, but it does get into that jammy feel, right?
Yeah.
You're right. Country Home drives the entire time.
Yeah.
The next one, so we'll jump over. Track 3 is where I kind of feel like the album gets into more of that kind of angry feel that is a lot, you know, really present in this album. You get an angry frustration feel. My overall theme throughout the entire album is kind of love amongst frustration and anger. You know, because this is our home. He's angry, he's frustrated, but we love it. And so love is mentioned in basically all these songs. And in places where you wouldn't really expect them, because that's ultimately what will help us and break down everything is love, right? But he's frustrated, and so track 3, just politely and poetically called "Fucking Up." Well, I'll just go ahead and we'll start that from the top. So, like, the first little bit almost reminds me of kind of Tom Waits, how it kind of pounds in there.
Yeah.
With the drums, but it has that Rockin' the Free World sound. It has a little more anger. We're a little more frustrated. I mean, the title is, hey, we're fucking up, right? We're messing this up.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you on sound. It's, like, it's probably the most, like, rockin' song overall, even though Over and Over and Love to Burn, some of those, I think, jam out. But
this one starts it, I feel like. You know,
it definitely starts it.
Because the first two have a nostalgic feel. It's kind of like there's a niceness to it.
Yeah.
The third one is, hey, we're effing this up, right?
Exactly.
We're fucking this up.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of has more of a kick to it. And I feel like the album kind of, it lifts off a little bit at this point.
Yeah. And this was, you know, Pearl Jam used to cover this a lot, played in encores.
Has a very Pearl Jam-y feel to it.
Yeah. But yeah, I always thought it was kind of a cool song. It was funny when you first heard it.
Sure.
You know, because you didn't expect Neil to get like the parental advisory warning label.
Yeah.
Well, but I think he got it just off this.
Yeah. F asterisk exclamation point hashtag N up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he did the old school like comic spelling of F and up.
Trying to dodge the parental advisory, but
that's
right. Out of work.
That's right.
So the next two tracks, 4 and 5, are called Over and Over and Love to Burn. These are again songs that it has that 90s rock sound with lyrics that are a little frustrating, but it has, like I said earlier, the theme of love. Like, the theme of love is so present. I mean, Love to Burn, sure, the name of the song, but some of the lyrics, one is just that gets repeated over and over, is take a chance on love, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a chance on love, and then it goes into the rock, but it's that idea of take a chance on love to let's fix this stuff, and that's what's gonna do it.
Yeah, it's a bit of like optimism after, you know, he definitely sets the stage. You know, he talks about his country home and frustration, and then goes into this like, okay, here's a bit of redemption.
Yeah, and these are the two songs, 4 and 5 back to back. You got 8.5 minutes and then 10 flat. So you got about almost 20 minutes of just rock and roll, great 90s rock and roll.
Yeah.
And again, you get that kind of angst, that frustration, but the ultimate message or the underlying message is, you know, love. track 6, this probably is my favorite track on it. Farmer John, and this is a cover of a Don and Dewey, which is like a 1960s R&B group. They did it, and then you had the Searchers and the Premiers do it later in the 60s that had more of kind of the Dick Clark Dick Clark feel, the Beatles, early Beatles feel, yeah. And you can hear that. What I love about this track is I could hear it in so many different genres, right?
Yes.
So many different genres. I think it would sound really cool. Has some great lyrics to it. It's a fun song. Yeah, we'll throw
it's
got
it
out
the
here.
Fun backing vocals.
Oh, it's got fun backing vocals that remind me of like a Weezer or almost like a Ween or something. So, yeah, track 6, Farmer John. We'll toss it on. See that? I
love the way you walk. I love the way you talk. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a great song. It's like I said, it's got a tinge of punk rock to it. You know?
Oh, absolutely. He kind of gives that to that. That's why it was fun when I went back and listened to the other versions from the bands we just mentioned. But to then kind of hear the evolution of it, or just how it
you can hear it in the guitar that
it does have punk elements to it. That's why that was a good call. It's a lot of fun. I'd love to hear more bands cover that.
Yes.
Farmer John. Yeah. Farmer John. So the next song, track 7, Mansion on the Hill. And if I'm not mistaken, was this one of the singles or the first single off this?
Yes. This was, I think, the only single.
Okay, so this was the only single off of it. Yeah, I remember seeing that, but I wasn't sure if it may be pulling off other than this. But yeah, so this was the only single. And this, to me, was like just the definition of the sound of this album wanted.
Yeah.
Whereas Over and Over and Love to Burn, they both had it too. Almost like how the length of those songs kind of maybe hurt it, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one's about four minutes and 48 seconds. Yeah. It has the sound. It has the feel. The lyrics are right. It makes sense that this is kind of the one that you're going to remember off the album. One thing I'll say is this album has that somber, frustrated feel to it. This next song, listen to it when we play it, but the hi-hat and the cymbals give it almost a rainy feel. So it has that kind of depression feel to it that, again, is this entire album in one song, really. Again, you kind of get that rainy feel. It's got the '90s feel, but again,
it's got a bluesy sound in the background. Yeah.
There's a depression to that song that you kind of feel, kind of coldness, a raininess that I got from it.
Yeah.
That again, I kind of feel is this.
It's kind of got that strong lyrical ability or component that he has to his songwriting.
Absolutely. And that classic,
and I
Neil
think
Young.
And it definitely, he has it on the whole album, but I think on this one is a really good lyrical album
for sure
song.
For sure. Now the next one, track 8, Days That Used To Be. So to me, this kind of starts how we said earlier, it started off with some nostalgia, then we get into kind of this anger liftoff. Right here, Mansion on the Hill is more kind of dreary, like we're going through rain. Now Days That Used To Be, to me, like it gets that, I kind of get that feeling that the clouds are starting to break. Maybe the rain has stopped. You're getting a little bit of sunshine. Just kind of the feeling I get. We'll throw it on here. Listen to a couple seconds of this guy. You know, it has a little more uplifting feel to it, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we're almost coming out of a storm, mm-hmm. You know? Days That Used to Be, he said, I think that's based off of a Bob Dylan song, My Back Pages.
That's right.
I think. Yeah. I read that somewhere. But yeah, it has a little John Fogerty feel to that one.
Yeah, it's got a little folk feel to it.
Sure.
And, I agree. I think it's got a great lyrical message.
Yeah. And so now track 9, Love and Only Love. So again, I said it throughout this entire review, but there's a central message of love that's going to kind of bring us through this BS that we're all dealing with in the world, in our country. And Love and Only Love is over a 10-minute song, so it's long. It really, like, this is another one this is that album, you know. It has the sound, it has the loving feel, the loving message, it's more uplifting. It just really has that Ragged Glory feel, because it's not. Yeah. I don't even want to say Neil Young anymore, because this album has almost has its own sound in the Neil Young era, kind of. Yeah, I mean, so that right there, the distorted, heavy distorted guitar that this album's kind of known for. But again,
I think that's what's good on the long tracks too, is that
you get more of that.
They jam out loud.
Oh yeah. That to me is, you know, love and only love will break it down. Love and only love will endure. Yeah. That's the message. And it's almost like the album ends there. The last track, Mother Earth, parentheses, natural anthem, not national anthem. But again, album's called Ragged Glory. This is the natural anthem. When I hear this, I immediately think Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock playing the national anthem, so it definitely has that feel. So one thing I want to point out before we even start playing this, I listened to this album tons of times because of this, but you get a feeling that it's like a hymn, like something you would hear in church. So I want to point that out, and we'll see if anybody can guess it as they listen to it a little bit. And I do like the live feel it has.
Yes, a little distortion.
Well, it's live too. So that's the hymn, and with the guitar, the Jimi Hendrix feel. When they bring in the other vocalists, there's a lot of harmony, which is kind of that's a nice little throwback to the old Neil Young days, right?
Yeah.
But you get that hymn. So the hymn's called "The Gift of Love," which is found in the United Methodist Hymnal number 408. But again, when I found that out, which was just today, this morning, when I found out, asked a preacher friend of mine, Jay Locklear, shout out. He told me which one it was immediately, and it gave me chills. The Gift of Love is the name of the hymn.
How long can
I mean, gives you chills. It's so again,
it's a strong closer. I mean, yeah, it's a beautiful song
and based after the hymn "The Gift of Love."
Yeah, that's so cool that like I always felt it was like some sort of hymn, or he adopted it from a hymn. But I never really researched it or read into it that much. So that's really cool that you and that your friend told you that.
Yeah, Jay Locklear again. Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, so that Ragged Glory is the name of the album. Neil Young, Crazy Horse. Awesome album. I loved it for so many different reasons. We'll get to the scores in a little bit. I guess we'll be right back. Ooh.
You've been listening to Album Swap at albumswap.net. We will be right back.
And now we've come to the conclusion of episode 3 of Album Swap.
Very nice. Smooth and silky.
Smooth and silky.
That's your PBS voice.
It's my PBS voice. So, this is where we like to review the albums and we give it a hashtag.
Give it a little score, too. A
little score.
1 out of 10. Decimal points count because only amateurs use just round numbers. You've got to use, I'll use all of them.
Fractional points. All right, so I'm going to go first and I'm going to rate Wolfpack and give my hashtag. So I gave it a rating of
8.75. Ooh, nice.
I just thought it was. I really liked the experimental. I liked the old and the new. I love the nostalgic feel it had. I thought it was really good. So overall, I loved it. I loved it. And it's something I'm going to put in the regular rotation.
Yeah. You could pass that on to the kids, too.
You know, I did play it for my kids. And they kind of mixed reaction. But I could tell, I felt like in the back of their mind, they were like, yeah, you know.
There's maybe something they like.
This is good, but I don't want to let Dad know it's good. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I think I'll probably have to put it on more for them to make them appreciate it.
Just keep playing it.
Or hate it. One of the two.
Just start subtly playing it, working it into situations.
Yeah. And so the hashtag I gave for this was hashtag funky stuff.
Funky stuff.
Like cool in the gang. You felt like you're almost kind of transported back to 1975, you know.
For sure.
Full on funk. No playing around. So I give it the funky stuff.
Hashtag funky stuff. I like it. So Wolfpack, Thrill of the Arts. You gave it
8.75.
And hashtag funky stuff. All right. So Neil Young and Crazy Horse. Don't want to forget about Crazy Horse. They sound great. I feel like we haven't even mentioned them, but they were great. Neil Young and Crazy Horse. Name of the album was Ragged Glory. When I first listened to this, my score wasn't like low, but it was lower than what it ended up being. Because the more and more I listened, you almost kind of like an onion, like it peels off layers. Like you kind of see a little bit more. And then when I had the hymnal moment, I realized what hymn it was,
Revelation.
When I had the revelation, you kind of had that eureka moment, and it meant more to me at that moment. So I am going to give it an 8.4. Feel real good about that.
Strong.
And I started off at a soft 8, worked up to an 8.4. And that's real strong 8.4. And my hashtag is Godfather of Grunge.
Godfather.
Because even though, Godfather of Soul, that's all that's been used.
Yeah.
I get it. But I like alliteration, and so Godfather of Grunge. Hashtag Godfather of Grunge. Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Ragged Glory. So, yeah, so 8.4 is what I give it. Hashtag Godfather of Grunge.
I was going to say, listening to you describe that, the word that kind of came to mind was it kind of grooves on you, this album.
It does. It really does. It does. I mean, because it's such a kind of a rough and angry album, kind of dreary, but it has that, just the message of the simple message of love will prevail kind of thing. Just is a good feeling, man. It just feels good. I really
all
enjoyed
you need
it.
Is love.
And it was, it, yeah, I mean, Kurt Loder said it was like one of the best, or it might have been the definition of grunge music as far as an
it's
album
blueprint.
At that point. Yeah, and so it, it just, yeah, man, the more and more you listen to it, the more I just, you gain more respect for it, really.
All right. So that's it for our reviews, hashtags, ratings. We're going to give a little teaser tip on to what we're going to cover in the next episode.
Yeah, on the two albums we're going to swap next week.
So our teaser tip for the next episode is...
Yeah, little bit of information to chew on. which I guess this is kind of a hint as to what we're going to be swapping each other next week.
Yes. So the teaser tip is Nile Rodgers.
Nile Rodgers, famous guitar player. Yeah. I think he's in the Songwriting Hall of Fame now.
If he isn't, he should be.
Yeah, dude's the man.
He is.
Dude's the man. So Nile Rodgers, that's the teaser tip. Chew on that. Check out our social media throughout the week. We'll be dropping other little tips. We're big alliteration fans.
It may be a free prize if somebody can actually figure out the two albums.
Yeah. Sure.
We won't tell you what the prize is.
We won't tell you what it is. Probably a 6-pack of beer.
Yes.
But we won't tell you what it is. Nile Rodgers teaser tip for next week. And I guess until next week, follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. You can listen to us on
Stitcher.
Stitcher.
We just got in on TuneIn Radio.
SoundCloud. Check out the website, albumswap.net. And yeah, we'll see you guys next.
All right.
Next time.
Thanks. Later.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.